guys. Yeah, but if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to start with the Commissioner Iacozzi. I understand you had to get extra dinner earlier, right?
Yeah, it's my birthday. Birthday
party tonight. Okay, very good.
Okay,
your birthday?
My daddy, she's a really, really old.
He's my middle one, too.
Yeah, I wanted to invite Commissioner Iacozzi to help perhaps shed a little bit of light on the current Inspector General's report that came out regarding the Medicaid reimbursements for 24-hour care. I know that there was some compliance issues, and if you wanted to maybe address that, tell a little bit about it, and maybe what's being done to clear up any ambiguity.
And my remarks regarding the OIG audit are that. My remarks thus far regarding the OIG audit have been that, in terms of context, it's an audit by the federal government of the New York State government. With regard to their monitoring and supervision of the personal care assistance program. As far as the federal government's OIG audits go, this has been a comprehensive activity that they've undertaken over many years. I think anybody who visits the OIG website will see that there are several audits that are online with regard to activities throughout the state of New York. In connection with this particular program. They've also audited certified home health agencies. They've audited the City of New York. Among the locations that they chose included Ulster County. I think one of the things that we have to be particularly thoughtful about is that at this particular stage, we have not really become a party in Ulster County to the audit. It's an audit that was done by the federal government of the state government. It was sent to the state government. Neither OIG or OMIG have contacted Ulster County or requested that we provide comments or any information or participate. And to the degree that, as I've emphasized before, it's really the federal government's findings and recommendations that in connection with monitoring this program that the state government failed to ensure that certain activities were being completed at the district level. So in that regard, we have really continued to take the position that we're following and complying with what the state government has directed us to do in connection with the program. I think the OIG audit even took time to point out with regard to a couple of the activities that they identified that in connection with monitoring reports that the state did of Ulster County, they didn't raise issues that the federal government identified. So to the degree that we're going to basically continue to be responsive to the state, which oversees our conduct, that's really the direction that we've been going in and that we're going in. And then I think it's really also important to note that the state is taking over the administration of the Medicaid program. They're in year four of a six-year plan to overtake the administration of Medicaid. And we're really responding to whatever directives we get from them in that regard.
So, I'm just can you all put it in context, the time frame, Commissioner, as far as like what years are they auditing so that we can have an idea of
I think the audit that was done, I want to say covered years 2008 to 2011. Thank you. So, are there going to be any changes as a result of the inspector general's findings, or are you going to continue the way that you have been doing? The OIG has not requested that we make any changes. Right now, we're administering the program in compliance with what OMIC and the New York State Department of Health have guided us to do.
So you feel as if you are in compliance according to the state, correct?
According to the state, yes, Chairman.
And the federal government is not of the opinion that the state is in compliance.
I think that's a fair conclusion to arrive at based on their findings and recommendations in the audit. And their audits of many facets of this program statewide arrive at similar conclusions.
When I read the story, I didn't know what was in the article. It sounded as if the state does have does say they want certain things to be done, that the county wasn't doing them, but the state never checked on it.
The state actually...
I thought you put that in a horrible context.
No, I understood. I think what you're asking is, the state does conduct what are called monitoring visits, and they generate monitoring visit reports. And in those monitoring visit reports, they make recommendations about changes that we need to make. And we arrive at those changes and we respond with corrective action plans. And we've complied with that process with the state throughout.
Let me just ask you this. It's important for the committee to know that in all instances, all the cases, all the clients that we review, that these are people that are entitled to the service. So if the services are appropriate, and they were properly delivered. So there's no one disputing whether someone receives a service they weren't entitled to. Mm-hmm. Just people that have presenting a disability or other health issues, where the doctor has recommended that they have a personal care service from 24 hours to 24 hours.
Well, that's what it was. It wasn't a doctor review or a doctor sign off. That was the problem.
So
because you're unable to get a position because they don't pay enough for anybody to want to do it.
This has been a problem in
so that's
rural
probably why they want you to take
Again, I think that's one of the reasons why the state is assuming the administration. They actually started with this particular service because of the difficulties they had to make it complicated by all.
Can I ask a question? Because I know I read the article, and it said that the federal government was claiming that the state owed them the money because Ulster County provided services that they weren't entitled to. So how did they get that?
But they weren't signed.
Well, that's what it said. It said that they weren't entitled to the service.
But
it doesn't sound like just paperwork.
I think getting back to the chairman's opening remarks, he said it best where he said that it's a matter of program compliance. It's not that there was any provider that billed for a service that wasn't provided or that there was any recipient that received a service that wasn't legitimate. It's about compliance. The federal government is interpreting that certain requirements needed to be met for the program that New York State did not meet. And that's why they're requesting that what was claimed for be disallowed. And I think a reading of the OIG audit really sets that forth in detail.
Sure. So what's going to happen?
I think at this particular stage, we have to respect the audit process. At this point in time, we're not a party to this audit. And I think it's important to emphasize that it hasn't been served on the county. We have not been requested to comment or to provide any information. This is another in many audits that OIG did of New York State's Medicaid program, and I think remaining in a holding pattern and respecting the audit process and seeing how it turns out is probably the most reasonable approach to take.
And then certainly the sector, you know, have very limited fiscal implications for the county we're in this, new world of Medicaid administration where the state's taking over the administration program and the county's financial commitment to Medicaid for cash payment. You pay for the fixed amount of money that you pay, everything goes to annually, and they need the potential when they re-identify an overpayment, draw fraud and abuse investigations, all those monies go back to the state from the government. There's no county dollars because we have our liability to do the fixed payment. So conversely, when there's a disallowance on our side, we don't have to pay that. So the fixed amount of money will be paid no matter what.
And this report dates back before your tenure as Commissioner of Social Services.
For the time frame in 2008 to 2011.
Okay, well, could you share with us in the future now if you have any correspondence with either the state or the feds, just give us the rest of what's going to go on and how that's going to go.
Absolutely. I mean, clearly, when I say staying holding pattern, you know, we would be prepared to react or respond, you know, to any contact we receive in connection with this.
I just ask one more question. So from here on, if you have the number of people receiving services through Medicaid, it's not necessary to have a physician verify that they should have had that treatment or not have the treatment. I thought when I read the article it was something about a physician not signing off on everyone, but maybe
very specific service to have. This is a high intensive 24-hour service that requires an additional signature of the regulations. It's not the program that's in that, it's a very specific service.
But are we going
to
be...
Well, at this point, the state's in the process of taking over that responsibility.
Oh.
We only have a handful of cases, 30 cases. So that's
okay.
And listen, so it's specific to the assessment, right? Correct. Yeah, I think that's...
So the crux of the issue is not that the services wasn't warranted or it wasn't given. It wasn't co-signed by the doctor saying it was necessary to be done.
That's not that was one of the issues. That was one of the major issues that they made.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
No.
Okay. Well, that's good. I'm satisfied with that. And, we'll be in touch if you have anything to say. Yeah, we're excited to hear help. So that's good. I think we can do.
Thank you. Okay. Enjoy the birthday party.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. We will move on to our next guest here tonight. That's how I get you. That's all.
Everyone here for giving me this opportunity. I am with the New York State Nurses Association, and our office is here, 243 Wall Street. And basically, we have a resolution that many legislators have sponsored, and also I have a packet here, and I wanted to go take just a couple of minutes to go over the packet, if that's okay. It will be brief because I am also on vacation. My grandson is here from Orlando. I just picked him up, and my husband said, don't worry about it, because Kim couldn't be here today. But the resolution, it's encouraging New York State legislators and the governor to approve and enact the state's Staffing for Quality Care Act. And recently, the County of Schenectady, they passed a resolution, and they read through all the material, and they thought that this was something that would be good to sponsor and support, because if you, when you go into your packet, in your packet, you're going to see a couple of the materials that we have, and one of them is the sponsorship 2015, A1548, Safe Staffing for Quality Care Act. The New York State Nurses Association, we represent 37,000 nurses, but 150,000 frontline nurses, which includes licensed practical nurses and certified nurses aides. This bill, on behalf of the New York Registered Nurses and the patients that we serve, NYSNA is short for the New York State Nurses Association. We support this bill, which would authorize the Department of Health to require all acute facilities to comply with minimum nurse-to-patient staff ratio. This was passed in California, and as you read through your package, you will see how it benefits the industry, the hospital industry in California, as well as the delivery of quality patient care. So it also in your packet, you're going to see the facts about this resolution. And one of them is if the outcomes are better for patients when staffing levels meet those established like in California. It goes on to also what people are saying is the myths, not the facts. So it gives you a comparison of the as far as nurses and the everyday crisis that hurts our patients in this community, in the state, or in the country, but more because I am from Kingston and I do use Kingston Hospital as a patient. And any of the hospitals that we go to get a patient, to as patients ourselves, we can see that there's always a shortage of nurses, of healthcare workers, whether it's the hospitals, whether it's the nursing homes. So the nurses have, I would say, we're getting, and it shows you all the other legislators and lawmakers that have sponsored with us and co-sponsored with this bill. But every year, I'll just end it here, every year we're getting ready to do a safe staffing with probably about 1,000 nurses from New York City all the way up, going up to Buffalo. And we go to Albany, and we do speak to our legislators, and we bring awareness to why it's so important that this bill is passed here in New York State. If it's not passed this year, we've been, Godfrey is somebody that has been a big advocate for this bill. We will continue in this county, in Orange County, Westchester County, and wherever we need to bring awareness, as I am here today with the board, we're bringing educational awareness to the Central Labor Council, to the Area Labor Federations, to wherever that we can go for people to understand how important this is for the quality patient care that we all deserve in our different communities. So thank you for having me. And I do have a packet here for you. I know that Kim sent you the resolution electronically.
Yes, and So I took the liberty of copying that. I think you gave everybody copies.
Did you?
Or do I have them left?
I think
the two bills.
Yeah, but yeah, that,
one thing that's important about the bill is that it is sponsored by a Democrat in Assembly and a Republican in the Senate. So that's always good when we have a bipartisan working on it. But
yeah, that nobody has
to do. Yeah, when I first met with Minerva, and I've been in constant communication with Greg, our chairman of the committee, you know, about having a conversation with you, and he readily knew of, you know, the problem, because this has been going on for years. And you're right, it's not only in hospitals, it's in nursing homes, and it's because of the ratio that the state health department dictates that the locality must have. And unless the state changes the ratio, you're not going to get any improvement in staff.
What's the ratio now? Is it like in each one?
Something like that, isn't it?
In some, and yeah, if you continue in your packet, it shows that it's 8-to-1. And 8-to-4-to-1 is the ideal, but again, then you have to look at the acuity level. If you have someone in ICU, it should be, sometimes it's 3-to-1. It should be 1-to-1. And it actually, I'm not a nurse. But I worked at a hospital for close to, about 20-something years, and as a healthcare worker. And just being around so long and working within the healthcare field, I worked here in Florida and in California. Something has to be done. Whether you are a nurse's aide, an LPN, a registered nurse, I would say even a housekeeper. It's something that without your health, you have nothing. And it prevents, and right now when, this is New York, but when you're in Florida, in Florida, it's terrible. And many of us, I have family in Florida, and on a personal note, I'm going to be retiring in Florida. When I go to Florida, right, I want to have the health care that we can have here in New York, because we're no different here than we are in Florida, and it's damn near the whole New York state is in Florida. When you go to Florida, everybody is from New York. Whether you're from Brooklyn or up in the Hudson Valley, it's amazing. So fighting for the
health care for New York first.
Right, but fighting for the health care here, well, on an international level, I also belong to other international unions that are fighting for the same thing as they are, have done in California. If it could be done in California, we can definitely, you know, have it, you know, pass it here.
And that will be a mandated for 1-to-4 ratio, then, if it's coming out of the state.
That's what it is in California.
I'm sorry, I would think that being negotiated with the state and the Senate and the Assembly, I don't know if that'll be
my concern would be on what would happen to the facility now that they have the same number of patients and others. They're going, would they have to almost double their staff in order to provide for that? That
1-to-4 rather than 1-to-8. Well, if you look at page 4 of the bill, the minimum staffing requirements, it depends on what the care of this hour in the trauma is 1-to-1. It's 1-to-2 for maternal child care units and critical care, intensive care. It's 1-to-3 for emergency room, pediatric step down. It's just 1-to-3 for postpartum mother, 1-to-4 for non-critical, surgical acute psychiatric units. It's 1-to-5
would
be. Right.
All the way up to 1. It goes from 1-to-1 to 1-to-6. 1-to-6 is 12 baby nursery units. Mm-hmm. So that's what the mandate ratios would be.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, I would still be concerned with the fiscal implications you may have on the facility if they now, as a result of the new mandated ratio, they would have to increase their staff in order to cover those or fill that ratio.
And I can appreciate that, but someone that's in a hospital that needs skilled care, if it's serious situation, you know, because if they don't do something like this, and whether it ends up with these figures or not, we don't know yet, because you know they're always negotiable. But this has been talked about years ago when I worked in a hospital. And I think you know it, Kirk, because we talked about it. You've seen it. I've seen it.
Absolutely.
You know, I know the last illness I had in my family was my brother,
mm-hmm.
who was very sick. And if it was not for the family being there,
mm-hmm.
it was horrifying.
And I agree with that, and I can appreciate that. And I guess it's in an ideal world, like these ratios is what they should be. However, my concern would be if it's fiscally unsustainable to hire that additional staff, but what happens when the hospitals or the facilities close because they can't afford to be open anymore? Because now they have something mandated coming out from the state that says you have to provide, so many nurses per patient. I think that would be something that would have to be.
So one of the things, and when you look in your packet about the, about the facts, it does save lives.
Mm-hmm.
And the hospitals, which routinely staff with 1 to 8, patient ratio experienced 5 additional deaths per 1,000 patients than those staff with 1 to 4. So when you look at the human being that comes into that hospital, whether it could be your family member or mine, right, it saves lives and it does prevent. So that is there going to be more staffing? Yes. Is it going to save lives? Yes.
Sure.
Is it going to prevent illnesses? Yes. Will the patient be there? Will the hospital save money? Will it be cost effective? Yes, because the patient will not be there longer,
sure.
Be there with more nurses taking care of that patient. They do receive that quality care in the hospital. So it's something that we have to continuously figure out, and then at the end of the day, look at it as far as it being saving patients' lives,
mm-hmm.
and helping the community with everyone, their seniors, we all get there. When we get to that nursing home, I don't know if you've been in the nursing homes here at Kingston, but just try and do a walkthrough.
Sure.
In any of our nursing homes.
I can appreciate all that. I spent 9 months in a hospital. And I was in an accident 20 years ago, and I spent 3 months at Westchester Medical Center in that of ICU.
Mm-hmm.
And, I understand exactly what you're saying. And quite frankly, it was the nurses, and it was that one-on-one, that one-on-two, one-on-three, they were responsible for, for getting me to a point where I was stable enough that I could get into a rehab facility. And then my one other question is, if the hospitals or nursing homes aren't in compliance, is there a penalty that they would have to face as a result of not complying with now the new state mandated laws that they would pass? Because sometimes my concern is that what if the supply of nurses and the supply of aides isn't there in order for a facility to meet those ratios as well? You know, some, I know that there's a shortage of, at least I know personally that there's a shortage of health care nurses, like home care type nurses, and that, mm-hmm. so that would be, you know, just another concern that I would have as far as if the facility wasn't able to hire what was required, if that would have, you know, a negative effect on or if there would be any sort of...
I don't know. Does it have anything to do with home care?
Expect that when the state does their surveys, they would find out right away. Just going through the employee, you know, work hours and records to see if they're in compliance, the law passed. I also agree with you about, you know, the financial stress that it may put on a hospital or a nursing home, especially in the fact that in Ulster County we get a lower reimbursement rate from Medicaid than, let's say, Dutchess County.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so maybe this bill, along with some other kind of momentum to get all the counties up to speed on the same playing field, you know, a level playing field. I'm going to support this as a memorializing resolution for the committee, but I think the state needs to look at, you know, the inequities in the reimbursement systems throughout the counties. I'm sure that was sick of that.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've heard
more retention 70 some odd years, 28 years, trying to get the state to, you know, get us so we get the same reimbursement that such a stuff. None of us have ever been successful. I don't know why we don't seem to have enough. Well, maybe if Schumer becomes the speaker. And I thought maybe then I'll give it to you to look at it.
No,
if you want Erica, maybe you can come up with some language.
Sure.
I'd like to see it come sponsored by the committee if possible.
Right. No, I agree.
Right.
I think it's a good idea. Yeah,
this is
just a few lessons that I have.
Yeah.
So
maybe,
yeah,
maybe we can come up with some language.
Absolutely.
For Erica.
Yeah. Is there anything else? Any other questions?
Thank you so much. I love
this.
It's very comfortable.
No, I know.
And I like the red.
Wear it on Friday.
I like it.
Brown.
Make sure Friday supports the troops.
Oh, okay. I'll remember that. So it's a few also for more goodies. Have a good evening.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll move on to resolutions.
Oh, come on. What's this, 6 months?
Resolution 133, adopting proposed local law 14,
2014, establishing a tobacco free license and reducing use of tobacco. Move for discussion.
I'll second it.
And I, if I might add, I want to thank you very much, Craig, for the opportunity for them, and you, Ed and Carl also, for their support. And I want to particularly thank Erica, because she did a lot of work with Tracy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, questions that Kathy had, but from the time that Ken and the executive that I sat down and I read the original bill and see whether he wanted to be a sponsor or not, there were a lot of, you know, that's the first time we saw it. There were concerns, there were questions. And we addressed anybody that had a concern or an issue, we really tried to address in any way we could. So I'm hopeful. I would love to see unanimous support. I don't know. I'm going to be calling some of the legislators just to see, because I have no really idea. I know my caucus, I think so far, I might only have one no vote, unless that changes.
Mm-hmm.
But the chairman, and I wasn't alerted that there's a sponsor of the bill, but Kathy, I guess, had a conversation with Tracy. I always say her name wrong. Steve? I cannot remember that. He had another concern about, well, what would happen if one of the store owners had some kind of a conviction on a background. Well, first off, they're all grandfathered in, so that doesn't even apply, you know. And in the future, if it's somebody new, and I mean, well, I guess it would depend on what that background is. I mean, gee, if you're a child molester or God knows what else, I mean, that would have to be taken into consideration. So I know, Ken, did you...
The issue was more that, you know, they had violations. Told the miners in the past, you know, with the process, you know, take that into consideration. It does. I mean, basically, with this new law, it breaks the slate clean with regard to violations of this law. It's mm-hmm. fresh. And then there's an appeal process that's built in.
Right.
Very
so has there been...
I think there was a conversation and there was
did you hear anything on that, Eric?
No, we checked.
I guess Kathy had agreed.
I thought that you briefly
said you mentioned
that.
Yeah, I
haven't. We had a conversation.
Well, I'd like to get something out. Or at least have her call Erica.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Very good. Anything else? I got an email from a retailer, not from my town, but I know him and his family, and he opposes the law, but doesn't really understand it. So my question is, has any of the retailers reached out either to the county executive's office or to this committee to ask about this local law? I mean, I know we've advertised it, public hearing, I mean, he works in a convenience store. He owns a convenience store. He's there every day, 7 days a week. But he doesn't get out. So he didn't really understand the law that much because he assumed that it would cost the county more money because of all the administration to do with this and the licensing. And I told him that there was no cost to the retailer because he said costs are going to go up to the retailer. So he really didn't understand it. But when we pass a local law, only after the local law is passed do the retailers get a copy of that law? So they get a copy of the approved law?
Or? Yeah.
No, I understand that, but I'm just saying.
We just passed a law on styrofoam.
Right.
Was every single store that has styrofoam alerted or
no.
educated?
No. I understand.
You can't. You do it through the public hearing.
From the retailers,
They have an answer.
It's always the, you know, what's this going to cost?
Right.
Right. Yeah, when you kind of get past that level,
yeah,
it tends to evaporate. The other concern that we have heard was that a retailer who had, we do send on either side routinely.
Yes.
Choice.
Matter of fact, I was in the mobile station in Fort Euland. Fort Euland, or no, Rosendale. I was getting gas, and I went in to get a cup of coffee. And they come in a county vehicle with a seal on it, but they park only at the other end of the... And the kid walked in, and, you know, and of course, they passed, and then he went right back into the van.
Wow.
That $150 is being spent very well.
They're pretty pressured. We do it twice a year.
And the kids look young.
Yeah, well.
They look young.
I thought it was a boy. I thought it was a male.
Right now it was a girl. It was a boy before.
Okay. Yeah. Well, this was maybe a month ago.
Okay.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
But I had received a letter that was sent from the chairman, and Vicki sent it out, or you did, I'm not sure, to all legislators, and it was from a gentleman from Quick Check. And I personally spoke to him also. And he wasn't as upset as I would think, you know, the email we got would possibly indicate. And again, you're right. Once they don't take the time, they don't have the time. It's every law we pass.
Right.
You know, if people, you say, oh, it was in the paper, or we had public hearing, and they, well, I work all day, I don't have to. And you appreciate that, but I'm comfortable that, I'm hopefully all you are too, that this is no cost. You know, we made sure to pair that right, I think, the first day we talked about it. And after reading, in fact, I have a little small article I cut out, and I hope to take it for session, because it's shocking when you read the statistics from, you know, people that study this, the damage that it does. And I just, for me personally, if it makes it a little bit more difficult for a kid to buy a pack of cigarettes, it's worth it.
Okay. So, on the resolution?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Very good. Carried.
Yes,
I think we can do 154 already.
154 and 151. It's the same.
It is the same thing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. 154. Oh, wait. Nope. We have one more. We have 156. That's reclaiming it just like this. Parental alienation away.
So with the exception of 156.
Yeah, with the exception of 156.
You're taking all the ones up to 170 or 78. 178.
Okay.
I'll move that.
Okay. Got any discussion on it?
Oh, I know that. That's probably not my all three of them, so.
Next question is on celibate. Because.
Well, we've been blocked. So you approve the block, now you have to move it to move the contract.
Right.
Resolution for the contract.
Right. I'll move the resolution for the contract.
Second.
Very good. You know, at first, and I sent an email and I copied everybody. I got your email along the first round. I didn't put the three on the list.
There you go.
I came back, but then I sent it out, just poured it out to you. But, you know, I didn't know what it was going to cost, but... Ken Crennel gave us a nice chart and also the cost up date this year of what these contract agencies are doing, not-for-profit contract agencies.
Yeah. The problem, it's not a problem, but I have a big question, is 10 of the resolutions are all for the same thing. It's just when I look at costs, there are different, you know, ARC, obviously, they get $1.5 million. But they all say in the abstract, children with disabilities 3 to 5, according to blah, 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 speech pathology, speech therapy, occupational therapy, boom, boom. So we have 10 separate vendors doing the same thing.
More than that.
More than that. Okay.
More than that. You've got two school districts.
Well, 3 to 5 school districts will do.
There's two schools. It's okay. There's two school districts, which is involved with Resolution 154, and then I didn't count how many other vendors, but it's what I would say.
That's a lot.
Yes, well, it's a lot. If I may, they're spread out throughout the county,
right,
so that there's easy accessibility. I'm assuming it makes sense to have accessibility for the children. I mean, you have in West Hershey's Road, which is just down the road from my office, Clintondale, Hurley, Benicia, Grahamsville, Monticello. I'm sure that they probably come here, right? You know, you've got them throughout the county.
Okay.
Highlands.
Inspire, which is down.
We're
all in one spot.
Yeah. No, I understand that. So then we're also doing Orange, ARC. Because it wasn't on this year's. Is this a new contract for Orange?
I think so.
That's 158.
Oh,
it's a
vendor. Well, no, but I mean,
I'm sorry.
They are pre-existing then. Okay.
There's two new ones on the list.
Oh, there it is.
Speech pathology and advanced therapy.
Oh, okay. There's actually one beyond.
Yeah,
okay. Well, there's one for Orange County.
Oh, okay.
I know there's a need for, we do it, but how come the contracts, some contracts are just a little over $50,000? I could assume that they're a small agency, and some are large, like ARC. I mean, is the contract that we do for them commensurate with what they can provide, meaning the staffing and the amount of work they can do?
School-based training, where it's a daily program that goes to school. Some of these services might be provided in the home. Some of the therapy. Under this program, we're required to provide appropriate institutions that are available. Also, these rates are not
paid at
the county.
And I would imagine these are mandated services, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you can't say you don't want
to. Well, I understand that. It wasn't the cost of that, so any resolution or something, except that it was going to be over $50,000. But now, did you get this? And then he made this.
All the contracts are the same.
They're
all the same, except for the name, right. And the location. And trust me, she read them. I looked it over one time for me. So yes, I did look it over. And
I just wanted to do diligence on, because I noticed that they're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were large. And that's only 40%. Those costs are only 40%.
That's where there's kind of all in the money, though, 40%.
Yeah.
That's why you keep crying for the state to take over Medicaid, because these things are getting... If I may, it's a big part of why our school budgets are so high, because these students go into our schools, and then we have to provide IEPs for all of them. This is the beginning of their school career, and it's very true.
School-age children, except for severely disabled, get that those services in the school once they're in the school. That's why those 3 to 5.
We have two programs.
But I'm saying is that this is overseen by state ed,
right.
And this is the beginning of what of their career as a student,
right.
From 3 to 5, and
right.
Then it carries into their IEP, carries into the school. So,
R21.
One of the things that we've been following closely is that the state is first funding the legislation, so the state's providing reimbursement to the current school at university pre-K for the state. They're not including disabled children or children with special needs within that definition. They look to expand education to the preschool level, which may also incorporate these service changes. Just as they do for school age children, if the preschool district is responsible for regular and special ed students, you might think the same in the other children as well.
Is it state education law requiring us to do this? But it's really also like a health. A health and human services type of thing, because it's not just
well, there's children here that will have HIV. That's part of the thing, and we're trying to. But these children have a whole summary of things. I only know because I'm reading the contract. There's no disclosure, but the services that are being offered are expensive, and they are listed in Schedule A, and I have a copy of one of the contracts if someone wants me to make a copy of Schedule A for you. But I mean, it includes, it's speech language pathology, audiological services, interpreting services, psychological, physical therapy, occupational, counseling services, orientation and mobility services, parent counseling and training, school health services, school health services, school social work, assistive technology services, appropriate access to recreation, and other appropriate developmental or corrective support services.
Lots of services.
Runs the gambit. It's eye opening.
My questions were answered. I'm totally satisfied. Thank you.
Move question.
On the resolution?
That's proclaiming April 25th parental alienation awareness.
I guess that this is it. Move for discussion?
I'll move for discussion, definitely.
Second.
Okay.
There we go. All right. It's pretty self-explanatory in the resolution. It's fairly short. Mary was going to try to make it tonight, but she wasn't able to.
Is she here? Is it in this packet?
Yeah, here. You can take mine.
It should be in here. What's your number? I mean, who can vote against that?
Yeah, I know.
All the whereas's and hims, it's like really defining child abuse, psychological child abuse.
Yeah.
I just go to the resolve because that's where the meat is. There's no question children deserve it, but no one knows how many that don't have.
That it is.
That's like the worst thing could happen. You know, whenever even in those conversations about abortion,
yeah.
Like, you know what I always say to them? It's hard when I say, is it better that a kid be born to somebody that doesn't want them and then suffer a lifetime of abuse?
It's
my mindset. I think of that. I think the worst thing that could happen to a kid.
Right, but there's also a lot of people out there who are looking for children as well. I don't want to make this an abortion.
I didn't even mean to say the word, bring it up, but
that just came
to my mind, that how many children are born to people that don't want them, and they're, that's a shame.
It's unfortunate. No, I agree.
Yeah,
really. Move the question.
Yes.
All right. All in favor?
Yes.
Aye. All right. Let's go to the next one.
179.
This was the Track Academy. This is about for training. Move for discussion.
Go ahead.
Yes, one second. Approving execution. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Approved. Yes.
Conduct certified renovator initial course.
Mm-hmm.
Conduct a certified renovator initial course.
Mm-hmm.
Lead safety training for renovation repair and painting. And they do that for county
contractors and homeowners.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Pursuant to a law, a regulation, if I may, Mr. Chairman, through regulation that was passed by the federal government. That requires the training to provide safety. 100% state. And homeowners? Well, how do they do that? Will they advertise it? Oh, all right. Like a public hearing kind of thing. Yep, it's through the Department of Health.
Oh.
And they have to be advertised. They're trying to do it on a monthly basis. They shall maintain capacity to 10 attendees and up to 24 attendees. That's what they're trying to do, special training sessions.
All right. I can't tell you how many times I've handed in my life and I haven't taken the training. And it's something that would be valuable to a homeowner.
Yeah, well, yeah. Who knew you were going
to buy a whole home?
Right?
No. Yeah. Now, I do know the inspections require the home inspector to look at the lead.
No, because you can have an actual inspection. An inspector, you know, you can actually, the federal law allows a prospective buyer to go actually have lead inspection, only special inspection. Remember, you're in my wheelhouse, so it doesn't involve real estate.
That's true.
So.
That's right.
On resolution?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we have one more, right? 180. That's improving execution of contract amendment access to staff relatives and to county as after service for children and
families. Yep. It's an amendment for over $1 million.
Yeah.
Increased number of places.
Mm-hmm. Is that because, I'll move for discussion. Do you think that's because after the county divested in Children and Family Services, you know, it was a slow divestion, and now they're taking on all of the cases? No.
No.
Why
is the county
hurt?
Contracting.
Right. I understand that.
I think it's as the need rises. My understanding is that the children that are going into foster care just going up exponentially, especially because our economy is
Yeah, economic issue as well as, you know, other things. Economics, of course, people have harder times, and the need for foster cares been going up. I mean, steadily since I've been working here for the last 3.5 years.
It's pretty eye-opening since I started on here. I really had no idea. And you kind of live in a bubble where you almost don't want to admit to yourself that there's people that need this much help you do out there. And that's tough. You know. But you do what you can, and I think that's what we're doing. And did we vote?
Resolution. All right. All right. Carried.
Very good.
All right. I think that's the resolution.
Okay.
I had, sorry, I lost that one. There was a big ad in the Freeman. You might have seen it. Where April was proclaimed something with the children. I'm going to see if I can find it.
Okay.
I'm sure I had it. And I'll email it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think you want to do some recognition or something,
okay.
I don't know. I'll send it to you with the details.
Okay.
Yeah. I had it sitting on my table for a few days, and I probably one day just thought it was paper, and I got full of them.
Okay. We'll just put that off under my business.
As you know, we created the Ulster County Coalition Against Narcotics a few months back. It's a committee working on recommendations to the full legislature on opiate and heroin abuse throughout the county. And I think that this committee should be apprised of what we're doing because we're the health committee. And quite possibly have an invite to come to our next meeting. I'll get you the date of the meeting.
Yeah.
But I've been talking to different people in the healthcare field and doctors, and one of the things, we've identified a high-profile person in the community who wants to speak out against the dangers of heroin and some of the dangers of the drugs that they go on, like a drug that I never heard of before called Suboxone.
I'm just trying to get in order.
Do
I have to drop names?
Not to the committee, but come to the committee meeting, and he will be there.
We should
at
the health committee
be. Well, I invited him to come, but it was on Saturday, and he had something to do tonight. But and also, we made a public service announcement video.
Mm-hmm.
It was done by SUNY Newport students, and we're trying to get that aired, and going to do another one.
About with drugs?
Yeah, not about the heroin epidemic.
Okay.
It stars
what about
district attorney.
Are they involved in it?
Yes, awareness is on the committee. She's on the committee.
There's
Now, the reason why I want you to come, okay, is because the epidemic is so alarming, and the stories you'll hear and the things that you'll see what we're doing is that what we'd like to do, and I don't have all the information on this, he was a famous basketball player who's a heroin addict, and he speaks around the country now, speaks to schools. I forget his name. I guess if I Googled it, I'd find out.
Mm-hmm.
But you're a sports fan. You know who you are. And I talked to some people about it. And everybody, the only thing I've ever gotten back was he's a great spokesman,
mm-hmm.
and it would be a really good initiative for the county to sponsor or to get different not-for-profits with the county to sponsor this conference event with this person. But come to the meeting and we'll, get all those details. But I think, this committee should not figure it out.
You have to pay for him to appear.
Yes, the largest amount that you pay, I believe, is $7,000. But there are different levels of his
how much he has to offer.
Yeah,
there you go.
Now, also, we could do a video conferencing streaming. of his events. So we can invite schools to, you know, mm-hmm. if they want to tune in to listen to it. And if we
can
get not-for-profits, and, yeah, I know. Yeah.
Schools don't want to interfere with schools.
Right.
I've gotten that message from them.
Oh, even after school.
$7,000, huh?
Or speaking of dollars. I don't know. I've never seen it. I'm going to investigate. But awareness is actually she's trying to get him to come to her program.
He's probably a multi-millionaire.
Well, yeah. He wants money as a basketball player, but he lost all his money. That's
yeah.
But awareness is on board with it, and I know this person who was in recovery. He's seen him. And I know we've talked in the committee about having some kind of conference and or, you know, informational meeting to the community. Mm-hmm. But just good things going. I mean, if you don't mind, I'd be the liaison to the health committee.
Absolutely.
Or, but
my name is?
It's probably on the calendar. Right?
Well,
you can, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. On the county calendar. I just
can't
next meeting.
I don't know.
All right, very good.
Do you want to vote this year or last year?
Oh no.
I'll make it a 15.
Oh, yeah,
how's that?
And I'll let Carl pick them all.
All
right.
So I will make a motion for
adjournment.
Got a second.
Everybody
wants to stay here.
All in favor, aye.
That's when he turns off the
Yeah.